Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 52, Betrayal and Redemption. Hello, I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. Welcome to the 10th episode in the Saga of Branwen.
Right, 10. Let's begin by reminding people about the contact details. If you'd like to chat or to contact us or to leave us any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at CelticMythShow@gmail.com.
And as usual, you can leave us some voice feedback using the SpeakPipe widget on our website at CelticMythPodShow.com. We'd love to hear from you all.
We would. And you can find the show notes for this episode at CelticMythPodShow.com/betrayal. Now, do we have any news and views?
Ah, yes, we do. Something a little different this week.
So what you got?
There's some interesting news coming out of Ireland. DNA sequencing has been done on an adult male buried at the 5,000-year-old Newgrange, which is part of the Brú na Boyne complex.
The Brú was mentioned in our Irish Book of Invasion stories, wasn't it?
Yes, it's linked to several of the stories, and the most famous of which is the story of Angus Og. I think he's one of the Irish gods of love, isn't he?
Well, some people say that, yeah.
Yes, anyway. However, back to the results of the DNA test. The man was part of an extended clan that were buried at the wonderful stone monuments that are scattered all across Ireland.
So how do they know that?
Well, they know that because researchers extracted DNA from 44 ancient individuals from across Ireland and sequenced their genomes.
Oh, okay.
So worked out who was related to who, etc.
Yeah, sure. So what about this chap at Newgrange?
Well, the interesting news is that DNA from the man at Newgrange had DNA that suggested his parents were closely related relatives, perhaps brother and sister. Now, by today's standards, that's actually quite shocking. However, it's a fairly rare find. But the really interesting thing is that where it's occurred in history previously, it's often within royal dynasties that have been granted divine status.
True, true. It's happened amongst the pharaohs of Egypt and the god kings of the South American Incan Empire, hasn't it?
Yes, that's right. Okay. Yes, everyone involved with the project was amazed because the evidence points to a divine royalty in Ireland. And it may actually be older than the Egyptian divine royalty, because Newgrange is older than the pyramids.
It does make you wonder if this dynastic race were the Tuatha-De Dananna of Irish myth and legend, doesn't it?
Well, maybe. Interesting, isn't it?
It is.
Sadly, we don't have time to cover all the evidence here, but there's a fascinating article online about it by the BBC.
And we'll link to it in the show notes at CelticMythPodShow.com/betrayal so you can have a read. But this research is definitely something to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. Now, can you give us a reminder of what happened in the last episode?
Absolutely. Last week...
Greetings, noble king.
We bring you salutations from King Mufulla, your kinsman.
And what does that red popinjay have to say?
He will grant Gwen the kingship in your presence, Lord, either here or in the Island of the Mighty. He begs that you accept his offer, wherever you choose to have the boy crowned.
Bran stood abruptly, pushing the table over in his haste. The Irishmen took a step backwards away from the angry king.
These terms are not acceptable. I could take the kingship for myself if I wanted.
Lord, there is no council but one that we can think of for you. Never before has he been contained in a house.
We could build the house so that it contained him and all of the men of the Island of the Mighty on one side and you and your host on the other. Never has such a house been seen in all our long and noble history.
That's true. It would be a place he could call his own in our fair fields.
And he has been wounded, my lord.
Wounded?
I say again, would you trust the word of these perfidious idiots. Enough, Ethnician. My sister speaks true. But as to whether or not we seek the Irish king's head or accept his offer of the noble house, I do not know. We will take counsel on this. That is true. He is, however, offering to open up his coffers to build this house for you. For us.
But what sort of honour price is that? And how would it help the families of those who have lost a father, a brother, a son or a daughter in these last few years of fighting?
It won't help them, Ethnician. There's nothing that can replace a loved one who dies in war. But we can call a halt to the fighting and stop any more fair and noble children of the Island of the Mighty dying.
That is true.
The long summer months drew on, and the children of Hlir enjoyed many lazy days in the heat. The air was filled with the droning sound of bees buzzing over the meadow flowers, and the distant sound of trees being felled. Day after day they heard the fallen trees being prepared with adzes, and then being sawn to length and hammered into place to build the mighty house of Bran the Blessed. The great hall reached as high as the sky, and its walls were so large, so all-encompassing, that a complete hill fort could have been built inside. The roof of the great hall was supported by 200 great thick tree trunks that had been smooth and intricately carved with scenes from the High King Bran's life. The Irish had devised a very cunning trick to play on the men from the Island of the Mighty. When the house was nearly complete, they fixed great iron hooks to these soaring columns. On each hook, they suspended a large craneskin bag, and inside each bag was an armed fighting man. When the host filled the hall, the Irish warriors would fall from the sacks and kill the unsuspecting Welsh nobles from across the narrow sea. However, one of the mighty nobles grew tired and restless as the house began to near completion, and bored of the life of pleasant conversation and the songs of Bran's many minstrels. He would often go wandering northwards to stand and watch the house being built and then furnished. It looked as though it was a fantastic job of work, and he knew that Bran would be well satisfied with the offering, and the thought did not please him. When the day came for the High King to take possession of the new house, and that at eventide when a great feast had been prepared, Ethnician, son of Eoroswith, decided he would inspect the house and make sure it was fit for his brother, the king. He walked inside the great house through the two great doors, wide flung to air the hall and the seasoned lumber. The smell of burning peat assaulted his nostrils and dominated the smells of fresh carved wood. As Ethnician walked, however, he clung to the shadows and cast many fierce, ruthless and disapproving glances around the craftsmanship that had put this wondrous house with its thousand rooms into being. When his eyes became accustomed to the half-light inside the vast great hall, he caught sight of the huge craneskin bags hanging on the pillars. He called over one of the Irish nobles, and together they walked to the nearest column, and Ethnician pointed to the bag hanging on it and demanded,
"What is in this bag?"
"Flour, friend, for the bakers."
Then Ethnician placed his hands on the bag and poked, prodded, and explored the contents of the sack. He realised immediately what the true contents were, and groped for the warrior's head. He then started to squeeze, and continued squeezing with all of his half-breed fae-given strength, until he felt his fingers sink right through the skull and into the brain of the suddenly limp soldier. He then moved on to the next bag and explored it as well.
"And what's in here?"
"Flour, friend."
Ethnician played the same trick on each of the bags suspended from the columns in the hall. A small crowd were watching and silently grieving at the sounds of bone being crushed and their hopes of turning the great war around by killing the children of Hlir being dissipated. The Irish nobleman was turning as white as the flour he claimed was in each bag, and by the time that Ethnician reached the very last sack, tears were gently falling down his cheeks. Evnissian looked at the Irish noble before placing his hands on the last craneskin bag.
And what's in here?
Flour.
And Evnissian felt all around the craneskin until he had found the warrior's armoured head. He was not going to leave this armoured man until he too, like the others, had been put to death. After all, what could be more innocent than squeezing flour? He squeezed, and he squeezed, until the muscles on his arm stood out like corded sail rope, and his face grew redder and redder until there was the sound of metal being crushed, and then the horrible reality of a man's skull being caved in. Evnissian smiled once more, and turning to the Irish noble, he sang this englin.
There is strange flour in this sack. Hacker and attacker, fierce, strong hand. Bright blade from bold warband, battle ready, hard to withstand.
When the clear voice of Evnissian was heard singing his enigmatic englin, the hosts of the Island of the Mighty and the men of Erin all came into the house. The men of Ireland came to the house from one side, and the men of the Island of the Mighty from the other, and they sat down opposite each other. Matholwch, the Red King of the Irish, stated his offer out loud so that all might hear, and Bran the Blessed called out his acceptance. The two hosts began to relax as the terms of peace between them were agreed upon. Matholwch rose from his throne and called Gwern to him. The people of Ireland all cheered and agreed that Gwern should be their king when Matholwch announced that he was stepping down from the kingship in favour of Gwern. The king then passed his son the crown and the sovereignty of all Erin. Gwern, the son of Branwen and Matholwch, was born of both islands, and although he was yet young and green, his heart was pure, and his rule promised great fairness. The two hosts were feasted then, and the mead horn made many circuits around the hall, all calling out their blessings on the peace between the islands and toasting the kingship of Gwern, the older king. The feasting seemed to go on for hours, and when the tumult of many voices began to calm down, Bran sat up a little higher on his couch and called the Irish king over to him.
Gwern, the Elder, King of Ireland, I would hear your oaths of fealty now.
We swear peace and loyalty to you and the Island of the Mighty, O mighty Bran. Gladly we acknowledge you as our High King.
It is good to see you grown into such a fine man, nephew. Come, sit and drink with me.
After his conversation with the High King, the boy made his excuses and went over to where Manuidan sat and held deep converse. All could see that the elder son of Clea and the new King of Ireland liked each other well. Branwen sat next to her brothers, and she glowed with an inner pride and a heart full of love as she saw them welcome her son with open arms. Nissian, the son of Eoroswith, called to the young boy, and Gwern gladly went over to sit with him also. Evnissian watched these conversations with furrowed brow, and a cloud of darkness hovered in his eyes. He also watched the smug faces of the Irish as they watched their young king be so warmly received.
Surely they have not been punished enough. Surely the honour price for our losses have not been paid. Why does this boy favour my brothers and not come to me?
He could take it no longer and finally called over to Bran.
Why does my nephew, my own sister's son, not come to me? Even if he weren't the King of Ireland, I would still like to show affection to the boy.
Let him come to you, gladly.
Gwern turned towards his uncle. Gladly will he go to his fine and handsome kinsman. The warmth of the greeting coming from the children of Clea had soothed away his fears and calmed the fluttering in his breast that he felt when he left the ranks of the Irish. The tall warrior was so much like the loving Nissian that Gwern smiled in innocent anticipation. As Evnissian saw the bright smile of the boy turn towards him, the long, thin, dark fingers of an evil plan solidified in his mind. It settled into his belly like coals from a furnace, and his head buzzed with the heat of the plan. For maybe 20 heartbeats he held his breath and considered the plan as the young Gwern walked confidently towards him.
Before all the gods, I make this confession. What I am about to do at this very hour is an unspeakable crime against my kindred.
His decision made, he rose to his feet and moved as quickly as lightning flashes from the heavens to the earth knocking Gwern over and grasping him by the feet. Before any man in the whole house could catch him, he had picked the young man up and thrust him head first into the huge central fire.
No!
Branwen screamed as she saw her beloved son burning in the flames, and she tried to leap forward into the blazing inferno. Bran, who had sat next to her, seized her with his right hand and his massive shield with his left. Every warrior in the great house rose to their feet, reaching for their weapons, making such a clamour as had never been heard before in a single house. The loud, deep voice of the blessed Bran boomed above the shouts and cries of the rising warriors, addressing the massed Irish forces surging forward.
You dogs of Gwern, beware the one with the pierced thighs. I may be wounded, but my wrath knows no bounds.
As everyone leapt into the fray with their weapons drawn, Bendigeidwrand held Branwen between his shield and his shoulder. No one would get to her. The hosts of the Island of the Mighty surged forward to meet the attacking Irish. And Evnissian smiled to himself as he drew his own sword. The moon rose high and bright over the trees as Evnissian stood on the hill outside the burning shell of the great house. He was breathing heavily, and the bloodlust had drained from him as Bran had called the retreat, and the tattered remains of the two armies pulled apart and retired to their respective camps for the evening. Evnissian could see Branwen tenderly picking her way through the bodies of the fallen, tears streaming down her face. Not once had Bran let her leave his side as he fought, the blood flowing in rivers down his mighty legs and his breath coming in broken gasps. Evnissian watched the camp followers search for the wounded who were unable to walk, men who had to be carried back to the druids at the camp of the Island of the Mighty. Hundreds more of the piled-up bodies were corpses, emptying the last of their lifeblood into the thirsty soil around the great smoking ruin that had been the house of the High King. Later, scavengers picked through the bodies for weapons, armour, torques and other loot before skulking off into the night. Still, Evnissian stood and watched from the shadows as the Irish began to lift the bodies of their slain onto their shoulders and carry them away into the forest. Curious, he followed them, glad to leave the smoke-filled charnel ground behind him. As he crept through the woodland, he began to see the flickering glow of a great fire in a clearing ahead of him. And edging even closer, he could see the mounds of bodies piling up around the fire and feel the presence of something dark and solid at the fire's centre. As he watched, other Irishmen, naked and sweating, lifted a body from the pile and threw it into the great pot that the fire was heating until it was full. Only then did Evnissian recognise the great cauldron that was beginning to glow cherry red on the fire. Only then did he remember Bran's gift to the Irish King Matholwch back on the Island of the Mighty. Only then did he remember the great cauldron of rebirth and its power to return the dead to life. Evnissian watched the steady stream of warriors clamber over the sides of the great cauldron and leap through the flames to land on the grass on the far side. Mute and silent. Their dark eyes scanning this way and that, through the trees in search of direction and meaning. Their bloodless wounds told of their dying, and the dark orbs of their eyes told of sights that they had seen beyond the cauldron's rim, sights that their bloodless lips could never recount, and stories that would never be told. Despite himself, Evnissian shivered. The next day, as the sun broke over the treetops and shone its pale light through the smoke from the still smouldering embers of the great house, battle was rejoined. The children of Clear pressed the Irish hard, and there were many who fell on both sides. But Evnissian noticed that the ranks of the Irish were swollen with fresh warriors. Warriors who slew silently, and whose dark eyes saw shadows and enemies from other realms, as well as the brave warriors from Innis Echedrin. As dusk fell, and the armies withdrew to their battle lines once again, Evnissian stayed hidden among the trees, as he had the night before, and he watched the Irish carrying their slain back off into the forest to the great cauldron of rebirth. He watched the not-dead warriors emerge from the great magical moor once more, waiting by its side to be led off ready for the next day's battle. Evnissian noticed that not one Welshman was among those being brought back to life.
and he realised that the numbers of the Irish were being replenished every day, and the numbers of the Welsh were dwindling more and more with each passing moment. This was a war of his own making, and he had revelled in the joy of destruction that his plans had wrought. Now, however, he realised that his actions would cause the tide of war to flow over Bran, his brothers, his sister, and the warriors from the Island of the Mighty silently and with dark, uncaring eyes. His heart was breaking, and he said to himself,
"Alas, God's cursed me as the cause of this carnage of my brothers and all our armies. My name shall be shamed from this day forward if I cannot find a way to make this right."
Casting aside his arms and armour, Evnissian crawled across the piles of bodies until he came close to the naked Irishmen who were loading the great cauldron up with fresh bodies. He lay there, as one dead, until he felt their hot, rough hands on him, lifting and throwing him through the air to land on the bodies inside the cauldron. As the heat rose and more bodies were thrown in on top of him, he knew he only had a small time before the cauldron would work its magic, and he stretched his arms and legs out until the skin on his hands and feet began to blister. He pushed, and he pushed against the cherry-red walls of the great cauldron using every ounce of his fey-born strength. Flames began to lick around the palms of his hands and the soles of his feet, and still Evnissian pushed as he burned. He stretched out, and he pushed, until with an enormous crack of rending metal the great cauldron burst into four pieces, and the heart of Evnissian with it. His body went tumbling through the flames, burnt and broken, to lie on the grass beside one of the four great shards of the now useless cauldron of rebirth. Unknown to any of his kin, he had given his life to allow his brothers a fighting chance against the unnatural forces of the Irish. And that was how victory, such a hollow victory, was gained by the men of the Island of the Mighty. Bendigeid Bran had been mortally wounded with a poisoned spear. Men died in their thousands, and the green fields of Erin ran red with their blood. Both noble armies were cut to pieces, shredded by the deadly combat. Nissian fell to an unknown sword thrust in the darkness, and none but seven men survived to taste the bittersweet cup of victory. These were the seven men who escaped: Bryderi, the son of Puich and Rhiannon; Manawydan, the son of Clear Halfspeech; Glivioi Ael Terran; Taliesin the Bard, whose words would one day echo down through the ages; noble Inaug; Gridiai, son of Mirian and Hylin, son of Gwyn the Old. These seven, accompanied by the Lady Branwen, started the long journey back to the Island of the Mighty. The journey across Ireland was long and hard, and their tears fell copiously. Bran was carried on a litter, and they all felt the pain of his imminent loss. By the time that they reached the Irish shore and prepared to sail across the narrow sea to Wales, he was near to his death, and despite their protestations, Bendigeid Bran ordered the severing of his head. They were all reluctant to obey his last orders, but he said,
"Take the head and bring it to the White Hill in London and bury it with its face towards France. That journey will take many years. In Harlech you will be 7 years in feasting. The birds of Rhiannon will sing to you. The head will be as good company to you as it was at best when it was ever on my shoulders. And you will be at Gwales and Penfro for 80 years, until you open the door facing Abahan Valen on the side facing Cornwall. You will be able to abide there, along with the uncorrupted head, but when you open that door, all will fail, and you will not be able to remain there. You must make for London and bury the head."
Bran paused then and looked each of them in the eye. When his gaze fell upon his sister, her tears rolled unchecked down her cheeks. He looked around the company for one last time and said,
"Now it is time to cross over to the other side."
Next episode, the seven men return to Wales and an increasingly despondent Branwen travels with them.
Well, we have a promo for you this week from the very talented Adam Ranger.
Have a listen to his super poem, Paean to the Sun.
Apollo, Helios, Sol, Ra and Lu. Oh my gods, have I missed you? Heating the earth with your rays. Summer sun, oh happy days. A sun-kissed beach, a dip in the sea. Sun on my bones, oh happy me. Light through the trees. A leafy glade. Sun on my skin and my day is made. Walking in the hills in the warm air. A sunny smile and I have no care. The earth needs water that I get, but I tire of getting wet. I love the winter time and too the night. The dark is magic, but it's balance, right? Oh, Apollo, Helios, Sol, Ra and Lu. Oh, my gods, have I missed you? That was Paean to the Sun, a poem written by me, Adam Ranger, and you can find it and others like it on my YouTube channel, Beneath the Long Man's Feet. All of the poems and stories generally have a nature-based or pagan theme. So join me on Beneath the Long Man's Feet, and hopefully you enjoy the poems and short stories I present for you there.
You can find more of Adam's work, including more poems and some stories, on his YouTube channel, which is called Beneath the Long Man's Feet.
The link to his channel will be in the show notes at CelticMythPodShow.com/betrayal.
Thank you very much, Adam. We'd also like to send out a huge thank you to those folks who are supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/Celtic Myth Podcast.
If you'd like to help support our podcast and help us to bring you some more wonderful shows, please do pop along to patreon.com/Celtic Myth Podcast and help us out.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of this episode, so it's time for some music. What have you got for us?
Have a listen to the wonderful music of Jenna Green as she takes us through the charge of the goddess with her song Soul of Nature from the album Crossroads. Full details will be in the show notes at CelticMythPodShow.com/betrayal.
So settle back and enjoy the wonder and the mystery of The Soul of Nature by Jenna Green. And we'll be back with you in the next episode.
So we wish you many blessings and say... Hulvaur.
Done to me all things.
Celtic Myth Pod Show. If you enjoyed listening to this show, please come and support us on Patreon at patreon.com/Celtic Myth Podcast.
We hope you'll stay tuned for the next episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at CelticMythShow@gmail.com or come and chat to us on social media. All of the links are on our contact page on our website at CelticMythPodShow.com.
We'd also like to send out a big shout of thanks to Coulan's Hounds for our theme music, and that's available at sfhounds.com.
This show is a Celtic Myth Show production.